Okay. So now I'll ask, is there any announcements? Thanks, Scott.
Not a problem.
Well, I can announce this, Amanda. I know there's only a couple of us on the call, but NCSC right now we're tracking a couple science standards that are being proposed for adoption across the country. So I think the big ones right now are Alabama, Georgia, and Michigan. And so far, they actually look okay in their coverage of climate change. I think I mentioned this earlier on the listserv, you know, how much is enough? But the Alabama one, actually, the most surprising of them all, includes climate change and includes human activities, and it really doesn't include any sort of like challenges to those two pieces. So we're kind of hoping that as it moves forward, it just kind of stays as it is and it's included, and it might be kind of interesting.
Amanda, are these standards that are the next generation science standards? There is adaption of them, or they're just
That's a
totally
great
separate?
question. Yeah, for Alabama, no. No, definitely not.
Not
NGSS,
NGSS.
for sure not. And they said that they, you know, looked at NGSS when they were developing them, but if you go and you download them, they are significantly shorter, first of all.
I see.
First off, and also just, you know, sort of NGSS has like some really nice nature of science and integration of engineering and kind of concepts threaded through it. And this is much more sort of how I see like traditional standards where it's like topic, 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 that kind of thing.
Okay, so there's none of the integration of practices or
I didn't
cross-cutting.
really pick up on that. No, so it's
What about Georgia and Michigan?
that's a good question. Georgia, I'm not sure where they are with that right now. I think our impression is that they're still pretty early on, but both states, as far as I know, aren't necessarily going with NGSS. Michigan is a little bit tricky because I guess before they had tried to even talk about NGSS, and they had a whole group of people, very anti-Common Core, show up and really push against that. I think that now things have settled down and they're ready to talk about it again. Oh my gosh, sorry, there's construction going on. Like literally right over my head. Of all of these states, Michigan might actually end up being the one that has the biggest challenges ahead. So I'll keep you guys in the loop with that too.
Okay.
Tamara, this raises something. I'm curious. We don't normally do this, but you know, are there things that people who are in those states that could actually do to support these kind of efforts? And I guess that's probably part of what people are already doing. If they're involved in that, they're doing it. We don't need to sort of send out an alert, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we're sort of cautious a little bit about riling people up before there's an issue. But I did want to kind of give you guys a heads up because the issues can appear really quickly. And so if I do send something out to the Clean Network, having a sort of quick response would certainly be really nice.
Sure,
Yeah,
that sounds,
that
yeah.
makes sense
If
to me.
there are issues that people can help with, yeah, certainly, if you want input on, certainly send that out.
But in a lot of cases, we're kind of like, all right, let's just see. Like, if we don't pay a lot, you know, bring a lot of attention to it, let's just see if it goes
Yeah.
through. Like in an okay
Yeah,
state.
sometimes you don't want to make too much noise.
Yeah, you don't
It
want to make too
attracts
much
other
hay.
things.
Yeah. And so far, I think that's kind of where we are with these three states. It's like, okay, we're going to see, we're going to see. I think Georgia is going to be open for public comment, and so I can certainly forward that to folks too, if they just want to take a peek and comment on the standards.
Because we know
Amanda.
that people have to be vocal about it, and so it's good to have educators, you know, especially with our sort of national perspective, to be able to chime in.
Yeah, no question.
Amanda, is one of the, I mean, being kind of on the down low about it before it goes to the public comment makes one thing, but during the public comment, is it not true to make sure that we have good representation
Comments.
of the community in the comment period?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So what I can do, we just actually sent out a something to our members in Georgia. So mm-hmm. if you guys are interested, I'd be happy to share that on the network. And if you guys want to share again with your networks, maybe within this, I think it's stronger if it comes from folks in the state, because then it's less like outside interlopers are sort of coming in and trying to push the state around, which is certainly an issue. So, but yeah, if you guys have networks, and I know you know a couple people on the Clean Network as well are in Georgia, I think that would be super.
Okay. Are there other announcements? Well, I can let everybody know. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks, Steph. I just want to remind everybody about the upcoming Climate Game Jam first weekend of October.
Okay.
Well, Peg,
since you're on the call, do you want to talk about the commitment to expand the professional development work that you did in the first round of commitments in this next round? You want to mention that in this?
Are you talking about the 2016 workshop?
Yeah, 2016 workshop.
We have commitments from 6 different organizations to put on climate workshops in a regional manner next year. They'll happen in Long Beach, Detroit, Salt Lake City, Boulder, New Orleans, and Charleston. And so there'll be 1 to 3 day climate education workshops hosted by zoos, aquaria, or Sea Grant organizations. The one in Boulder will be by UCAR. All of them will be under the, we'll all work together to plan these regional workshops. They'll all have some common elements, but they'll also have local flavors of, you know, taking advantage of local climate experts. And they'll be open to formal and informal educators from that area or other parts of the country who want to participate.
How many people will be at each of these?
We had 5 last year. Anywhere that ranged anywhere in size from 25 to 80 people.
And one of the other things that I think maybe the network would value is maybe, Peg, if you or Bruce or Molly would be willing to kind of talk through some of the findings that came in the evaluation work that you guys do. I mean, you do really find some summative and pre-post work. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of different communities in the network that are doing different professional development work, and maybe there's some insights from your in-depth analysis. Not that others don't do it, but I'm just thinking that anybody's doing this, you know, the target work, or going after is a moving target.
This is separate from the Climate Stewards and the Climate Jam, is that correct?
Yes. Well, and actually the workshops are part of the Climate Stewards project, but these are, as we found out, you know, when you make an opportunity available in a regional manner, you get people in addition to a rather small circle of climate stewards.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the people who actually attended these were not climate stewards.
I see. Were they run by climate stewards?
Well, no. I guess you could say it's a partnership. For example, the one that will happen in Detroit, one of our climate stewards is a staff member at the Detroit Zoological Garden, same in the the Salt Lake Hopley Zoo. The one in New Orleans will be done by the Audubon Nature Institute, which is basically New Orleans Aquarium. And so we'll be working with them to determine the scope of work and the workshop agenda. So it's kind of a partnership.
So do you have a template for what this workshop is, or that you provide to them, or how do they, and are you the one that's funding the workshop?
Yes, we are funding. So each site gets $5,000 to run the workshop. It's a grant. And then we work with them. We provide some sample agendas, and depending on whether they want a 1 or 2 or 3 day, we would like the 2 or 3 day option. Then we work with them to develop the agenda, and we can provide speakers to the sites, hopefully local, but we have provided some travel for some speakers to get to a workshop site.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of it's a jointly developed agenda, but we do have plenty of past agendas that we work with, and then our evaluation team evaluates each one of the workshops and then provides, because some of them have some common elements, and then there are some uniquenesses for each workshop as well. We roll those all up into a final workshop summary that, you know, maybe some future meeting we could have the evaluators talk to this group about, to, you know, to give us some lessons learned about what's, you know, what we found out with, you know, the different workshop models that we've tried.
Uh-huh. That'd be great.
Do groups that run these workshops, do they do these multiple times or just the one time?
It's usually just the one time. The one in Boulder this year was run by Terry Eastburn. She's one of our climate stewards, but she's also a staff member at UCAR. And they ran a 3-day workshop at Boulder, but they made visits to the supercomputing. They made a center to the ice core center. They brought in a lot of NOAA scientists and UCAR scientists. And so they had a very full, packed 3 days. But then the funding that supported the bus transportation and, you know, those kinds of logistical support.
Great.
Yeah. So this seems to be a very popular model, and what we're thinking about doing is, you know, continuing this in the future. It might be that if we have plenty of funding in the future, we might be able to do more workshops in more areas. We have a mm-hmm. couple of workshops that are going to happen at Lamont Doherty, because we have a grant there with Nesta and Michael Passau. So we'll be doing several workshops up there. And we always have a one-day workshop at NSTA.
I see.
At the Exhibitor Workshop. But we buy our way into that.
Mm-hmm.
you know, kind of like you buy your friends. Well, we buy our way into NSTA. We kind of got tired of doing the old, you know, roll the dice, maybe you'll get in, maybe you won't get in presentation thing, which, mm-hmm. you know, worked for some people, but it wasn't working for us, and we wanted more designated time together. So we buy exhibitor slots, since NOAA is a fairly large exhibitor at NSTA. We have the option of then of buying time slots as an exhibitor workshop, and so that's what we do now for our climate. Yeah,
and on top of that, the exhibitor workshops are much closer to where most people are. And
yeah,
the attendance is much higher for exhibitor workshops.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've had trouble
sessions.
At NSTA is, we do this hit or miss thing, just like Peg described, and then 5 people show up.
Yeah.
So
right.
Frustrating.
Well, and, you know, so, we had attendance at our one-day climate workshop last year of over 250 people. So we felt that was a good use of our time, effort, and money.
Yeah.
And the site is always in the convention center, which means that you're always going to have a better crowd. And if you get on it this fall, we're planning to do a half-page ad in the first day's program, which then always brings in more people as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess the experience in the past 15 years of doing this thing with NSTA was finally figured out a recipe of what works.
Yeah.
So that's all I have. Thanks.
Hey, this is Scott. You mentioned the idea of having a presentation from the evaluators for the climate ed meetings that you do around the country. Do you have kind of like a very good time for that? I mean, is this something that we should wait for this first set or the second set, I guess, or whatever it is, the next set of ones to happen, or do you see something that we could be doing, you know, maybe in the beginning of the new year or so?
Well, certainly we have some lessons learned from the last go-around, and we had 5 workshops last time.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do have our data, and they're putting together a final report. So we could certainly share lessons learned, you know, soon.
Okay.
course,
that final report's done then.
The next round of workshops probably won't get started until the first part or spring of next year.
So Scott, one of the advantages of doing it earlier is one of the things that's interesting when you start announcing these regional workshops is a lot of different partners show up and want to be part of it in one way or another. And this happened in Seattle, and I think you know some of that from your own personal experience. But you know, it's one of the really interesting, you know, collaboration opportunities because you've announced something somewhere on something. And next thing you know, the woodwork starts activating, and that's a wonderful thing.
So even just doing a presentation here, I mean, our networks just extend, you know, way beyond folks on the phone. So, yeah.
Right, because there are people who listen to this recorded conversation. So I always have to remember that I'm speaking not just to the people I'm talking to when I'm on this call.
Yes.
And, you know, and that's an important aspect.
So when would it make sense if you're going to be having these in the spring, maybe having this, having a talk about the evaluation and the opportunities for the spring, maybe in January on the Clean Network call that we could advertise widely would be useful.
Okay. So we'll think about that for January then. Good.
Does that make sense for you?
Sure. No problem.
Good. That'd be great.
Need to work it out with Hillary and Brad.
Are the evaluators, I assume?
Yes, Hillary and Brad. They're in. They have a company called Tech for Learning, and they've been evaluators with me on multiple programs, but especially they are the climate stewards evaluators.
Great. Good.
Okay. Are there other announcements? So for those of you who don't know, I mean, we have all the abstracts were submitted to AGU. We got about 105 climate literacy abstracts, which is about the same order of magnitude we had last year. So that was great. And I think we are going to have 5 oral sessions and 7 poster sessions or something like that. I think that they'll all be scheduled Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday of AGU week. And I believe, given the distribution, we will not have any oral sessions concurrent.
Okay.
That's wonderful.
So.
Actually, Tamara, there's a side conversation that relates to what you just said that I'd like to explore with the people who are on the call, if that's okay.
Okay.
It relates to the AGU. Miranda Massey, if you don't know the name, she's the woman who is the director of the Climate Museum that's being established in New York City.
Yeah.
Some of you may have caught that conversation. I've mentioned it before on the call, but maybe not everybody was there.
Yeah.
One of the things that they're doing in the development phase, they're really in the development and fundraising phase of the initiative, but in this recent discussions with her, I had mentioned that, you know, coming to AGU, she was going to possibly submit an abstract, but just didn't have the time and the bandwidth, and it was kind of preliminary. But, you know, the fact that you have 105 presentations means you have a lot of leaders, and San Francisco Bay Area is a leader in climate education at the informal level as well. And I'm wondering if there wouldn't be value in having a side meeting, discussion, exploration with Miranda to have her come to San Francisco and join with some of the climate education leaders who both are at AGU and also in the Bay Area to explore really, the informal, you know, best practices and partnership opportunities and next steps, however we want to frame it. But for those who are on the call, do you guys see value in kind of convening a separate conversation, whether it's at the California Academy or the Exploratorium, or, you know, there's so many partners in the area that do informal education. Does that sound like a good thing to do in addition to a busy week?
I think that finding ways of having conversations with that kind of effort that could benefit from our geographically distributed population of the Clean Network and what we could potentially benefit from understanding how they're moving forward in terms of their network and community would be very valuable. I could even see it in the context of what we're planning for the workshop, which is the collective impact conversation around the member networks, the smaller scale efforts. So,
right.
Yeah, absolutely, I do see that there's value. One time that I might suggest is Thursday afternoon.
Yep,
workshop in the morning, and having that in the afternoon would be really great. I think.
Yeah, just segue right there and then maybe have a social dinner if we choose to Thursday evening, something like that. You know, it's optional.
Yeah, we'd have to make a reservation ahead of time, but and I'd have to find out about, I don't know that we would have the same room as we have in the morning because Pranati might have it for something else, but we could certainly figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do others have any other perspectives? I don't know how many people we have on the call today. Does anybody else see that as a valuable discussion space?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Okay. Just one of the reasons why I think it's a really savvy idea, just picking up Mark McCaffrey's love of that word, is the vision that they have is that this is not only for the bricks and mortar museum that's in, say, New York City, but it's also a service and almost a backbone structure for the wider informal education space. It's not supposed to only be for that physical space. At least that's the current vision. Whether they're able to finance that vision is another matter. But that's partly what this discussion is about. And they want to build
on the
body of work.
Well, we do have a session. I don't know. I can't remember now where I slotted it. Time-wise, but we do have a session that's focused on informal education and citizen science, and then a separate poster session that's focused on place-based science, and there's relevance to what they're doing with those.
Yeah. So I'll be speaking with Miranda tomorrow. I'll mention this to her, and I'll also mention the sessions that she could attend and learn from beyond just this, the conversation we're talking about. All right. That's perfect. Thanks so much.
Okay. Frank, do you have more information about the museum, like who's funding it and where they are in the process and who they've been connecting with, all those kinds of things?
So not very much. They're very preliminary. I don't really understand how they were chartered. There's some kind of organization that has given them the ability to move forward with this idea in an official capacity related to New York City. I don't really understand because if you read the articles, it's like there's some kind of decision point that was given by somebody that I don't really understand. But it's got heft. They're at a very preliminary level. The leaders in our community who work in this space, there's a fair number of us who've worked on informal over the years and, you know, exhibits and engagements and professional development and research. Their posture is very collaborative and open. They want to learn and build and collaborate. And they're actively developing the pitch that will generate what the funds, you know, are about. So that's where they are in the stage, as far as I understand. But I'll clarify more of that tomorrow. There are some advisors that have already been brought in. I believe Tom Bowman, who's a member of our network, is part of that, as is Ed Maybach, who we all know. So, and there's probably others, but I don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's about as much as I have. It's very preliminary, though. But the overwhelming response from the press release was, how do I put it? Miranda said she absolutely was inundated by interest, collaboration, and you know, the woodwork activated very actively for her, and she's been very busy engaging different partners. So, I mean, they are capturing people's interest.
Great.
So that's where things are at the moment.
Great.
Cool.
Okay. Any other comments or announcements?
Oh. Well, Tamara, this is Scott, of course. This is following up on a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago. A group of us talked about environmental literacy and the report that came out. I think it actually was last month. And one of the things that we were playing with was the idea of having an informal discussion that was more like a book club meeting, where we'd encourage people to read maybe not the whole report, but a section of the report, and then just have a discussion in this, you know, in maybe one of our informal discussion things, literally in the next couple of weeks, just to really explore what's happening with environmental literacy and you know, work that Karen and Boros probably involved in a couple
sure,
of others.
I think that's a great thing to experiment with.
Yeah,
we
haven't done that before. It just means we kind of direct the conversation a little bit more by having a topic and something to read in advance. Yeah. But the idea
well,
was...
what we can do is we can pick the section and post it on the schedule and then point to it.
Yeah. And I don't know whether Frank, well, I haven't heard his voice on here, but there may be a particular section that we could do. And it might just be, you know, the introduction or the summary. And just sort of explore that a little bit more, because we're trying to think about how that relates to what we've been talking about in terms of collective impact for climate literacy. And are we, you know, is there a broader project here in some ways that
mm-hmm.
might actually be more successful in engaging?
Is there somebody on the phone who's read the report and would have an idea of what section might be useful to focus on?
Well, Vicki Arthur from Forest Service was, Forest Service actually funded the report with NAAA and NEEF. And so Vicki was going to generate a kind of a key points, key findings of the report. I don't believe that Vicki has done that yet. I haven't seen it yet either, and we were going to kind of use that as the piece. But one of the things I think we were looking at here was whether or not, in the title of the report, it's the Environmental Literacy in the United States, you know, an agenda for leadership in the 21st century. And one of the reasons why we were interested in this was we've never done a climate literacy in the United States, you know, reports. But what Vicki said was that there is a significant amount of climate literacy in this report. And so, you know, we've talked in previous conversations about the National Climate Assessment and feature documents or some kind of way of baselining where we are in the field. And would this report either generate a prototype or customizing this for actually having that kind of report. You know, there's a lot of strategic value in having a report like this. And mm-hmm. could this kind of help us get there? And from what Vicki said, there wasn't very much money that went into this. So there was a lot of, you know, shared, not much money was covered on people's time, but it got done. So
mm-hmm.
it's an interesting, there's a wider purpose to this conversation.
Yeah. We felt that it might be useful to have, you know, as we start this sort of new academic year, have that discussion and you know, see whether there's something we can learn from that. And, you know, as Frank is suggesting, there may be a climate literacy, you know, in the United States, an agenda for leadership in the 21st century report that we can do also very inexpensively and have some impact.
Right. And just to piggyback
that a little
bit further.
So you're talking, instead of talking about a particular section of the report, you're talking about seeing what the advantages of the structure of such a report in with respect to climate literacy versus environmental literacy.
Is there value in having a second report, or is there more value in using this report?
That's a good question.
That's a question that I think is part of the scope of the discussion.
Yeah.
Well, what I would say, I mean, I was just looking at the schedule that we have, and what I would suggest is that October 6th is an open informal discussion time. It gives us a little over a month. If we were to, it would be good to identify a piece of it, and I kind of like maybe talk about the overall report, but then identify maybe an introductory or executive summary section that we could talk about in more detail. But I would identify October 6th because that we have an open discussion the week before that, so we can prompt people to still read it. But we have presentations kind of before that. So that's what I would suggest.
That's great. Well, maybe what I'll do is I'll contact and see how her summary is coming, because that's also a stimulus for this. Definitely working on it. And
And Scott, if you could put the link there also to the report itself, you know, we can just sort of start to accumulate what might be useful for people.
Exactly. I think that would be great. And the you know, the chapters are relatively small. They're just 8 or 9 pages, so they're not huge.
Mm-hmm.
So, look through them. Good. And I'm sure Vicki will say, oh, yeah, this is, you know, chapter one really is a good introduction to all of this stuff. That would be great for discussion.
It would be good if she could be on that call. I wouldn't ask her to facilitate it or to, you know, to do anything extra.
And also Karen Holweg was also on the call when we were talking about it, and she's you know, somewhat intimately involved in the report development and funding and work. And she was saying that having some of the leadership of the report itself be there would be a, you know, understand the process and the, you know, the timeline and things of that nature would be valuable. Also, we should probably think about whether or not this is just an hour. You know, Peg, you do book club stuff. I mean, how long do those conversations go?
Well, they last an hour, but I think we're expanding it to an hour and a half, because if you get a dozen people on the line, an hour isn't enough time to really get a discussion going.
Yeah.
Right. So I think we should think about the agenda.
Well, we can think about the agenda, but I'm concerned about trying to extend it longer when people are busy also. The other possibility is we could have a two-week discussion and do it September 29th and October 6th, which are both currently informal discussion periods. And then we don't have another informal discussion until the end of October.
Let's
get some input from Vicki as to...
Yeah.
And then we can sort of think about what makes sense for an agenda, and splitting it over 2 weeks is fine if that makes sense.
Good. I think it's a great idea, especially to have the time to do that and to be able to come back to it. Good. And as Karen recommended, there's two people that she worked with or knows of that were instrumental in the report, and Frank alluded to it, too, and Judy. And
it would be good if we can – go ahead.
We could call on them, you know, and that maybe it is on the second thing, like on October the 6th, or some subsequent discussion that we have, or we actually have them come in and do a presentation on that, a bit more formal presentation on the entire report once we sort of primed for it. So a couple of possibilities there. But we had a pretty lively discussion around all that. I mean, I think it all got recorded, so I hope folks have a chance to look at it.
I think that if we can try to capture the main point, so if we do have a two-week discussion, we try to capture the main points and outcomes of the conversation for the first week so that people can read it and participate in a meaningful way on the second week.
Yeah. I think it's a good plan. Frank, how do you feel about that? Will that work, you think?
I think so.
Good.
Okay, are there any other comments or topics of discussion? Okay, well, then if there aren't any, we will follow up on these ideas, and we'll talk again next week. And next week we actually have a presentation. Juliet Rooney Varga is going to be speaking on climate, engaging the broader community of users, and it's really about her partnership with Climate Interactive and the simulated negotiations that she's been running.
Perhaps since we have a couple minutes extra here, we could spend a little bit of time talking about the kind of the agenda for the coming, because I mean we've got a couple big blocks of things, and then we've got the COP21 stuff. Mm-hmm.
We have on the December 8th, we are holding that date to potentially have a live interaction with people at COP21.
Okay.
So we haven't been able to get too much further there. We had that conversation with Kristen Poppleton.
Right. Our teachers are going to be there that week.
Yes, right. But we certainly, right now, we don't have a whole lot in November yet. So if there are ideas for particular topics or particular presentations as people do prepare for COP21, it would be great to have some of those conversations, preliminary conversations.
Great.
Sure. Sure, because I mean the reason I'm asking is the November 24th would be the Tuesday before COP begins. So if we could just maybe pencil that in as informal discussion / preparation for COP 21 as a placeholder, because the December 1st will actually be during the first week of COP. It's looking like I'm going to be there. And
that's
surprising. Late breaking news. related to climate education, actually, but it's still tentative. But the Earth Day Network, Climate Generation, Alliance for Climate Education, and others are all zooming in on climate education at COP. So, you know, doing a discussion there on the 24th might be a good idea, if you guys wouldn't mind holding that.
No, that would be great.
In the edit right now, it's great.
I appreciate that, Scott. Thank you.
Not a problem.
And we can pretend, I mean, the first is also a possibility, too, in terms of, you know, whatever is the breaking news, we can use that time also.
If things go as planned, I will be in Paris at COP on the 1st.
Okay, well, I'll put
okay.
So,
And they have something. They're working on something called, you know, expert in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So you know where you're supposed to reach out from the U.S. Center out to constituents an expert reaches out. So I mean, I'm more than happy to, if we want to put, you know, informal discussion / you know, maybe a impressions from COP 21 week one as a placeholder there. That's
the first?
Yes, the first.
That would be great. Yep.
So I'm willing to do that as well.
So when would you be getting there, Frank?
Chances are I'd be landing on Saturday the before the 30th. So that would be whatever that is, the 28th. Then the U.S. Center opens on the Monday, the 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And... so the Wild Center. Has the Wild Center presented on the Climate Youth Summits as a model for the Clean Network yet?
I don't think we've done that.
I don't think so.
So Jen Crester at the Wild Center has been doing an extensive amount of work on youth engagement through Climate Youth Summits.
Yes, I actually have met. I think when I was at the White House, I got a package from them, so I need to follow up with them.
I think given one of the commitments. Jen Kresser. One of the commitments from the December 3rd Climate Education Literacy Initiative was related to this, and they've done extensive and really, really impressive work. They collaborate with the Alliance for Climate Education in New England, and I think it would be a good idea to, engage Jen to ask if she wouldn't mind briefing or informing the network about the work that they're doing. Because they're really trying to generate a youth engagement on climate movement. And, you know, there's a lot of different pieces of that puzzle. Alliance for Climate Education is just one of them, but there are others as well that are complement and offset each other. So I think that's what our session is potentially going to be about.
Oh, I see. You mean at COP21?
Yeah. Okay. That's why I might be going.
Okay. Great. Well, I can contact her about potentially briefing our group about their work.
Yeah, I think that would be worth. I mean, I think you guys would benefit from learning about that body of work, because I don't think that our network is well aware of that. So I think that's kind of the point of that.
Right, Tamara, would we do that in November, earlier in November, then, if we can?
Yeah, if we can. I'll email them. I'll CC you so that we can see if we can get them to. Okay.
Very good.
Great.
All right. Great.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Have a good day.
Bye now.
Bye.